Good morning, and welcome to your wake-up call. My name is Tana Hartman. I'm co-host today with Dick Paddock, who's also doubling as our engineer. Morning, Dick.
Good morning, Tana, and welcome to all our friends and listeners out there, including those three who are might actually be on the internet streaming.
Yes. Well, as everyone knows, Haiti on Tuesday suffered an incredibly strong 7.0 on the Richter scale earthquake that has devastated the country. And if you've been listening to the news lately, for instance, Fox News has had all of, or at least in the day following, their top three radio programs had all of something like 7 minutes of coverage of the disaster. MSNBC had quite a bit more. But what doesn't seem to be getting a whole lot of coverage, except on places like Common Dreams, is just how Haiti came to be so vulnerable, so completely unable to protect itself and respond to this disaster. And that is something we're going to talk a little bit about today. We are hearing everywhere that Haiti is the poorest country in the Americas. We know that some 80 to 90% of their population live in abject poverty, and one out of 10 or 12 children dies before they reach the age of five. Life expectancy is around 60 years for most of the populace, and the illiteracy rate is around 50%. In 1804, Haiti was controlled by France, and that year they fought and won their freedom. And for a little while, Haiti was the first black republic in the world. But France threatened to reinvade them and to reestablish slavery unless Haiti paid for loss of property, including slaves. And the French demand was that Haiti pay 150 million francs, and today that is the equivalent of about $21 billion. Now imagine this, 1804, I guess it was not until 1825 that Haiti actually began to pay this money to France. The debt was just, it took them some 120 years to repay, and it was exacerbated by things like a series of dictators, such as the very famous Duvaliers. Dick, do you know much about the Duvaliers, Papa Doc and Baby Doc?
The only thing I know for sure, other than the fact that they were clearly supported by the U.S.
Yes, as long as they were anti-communist.
Of course, that's all it took. Whether or not communism was something that had something to offer was irrelevant. It was just because communism is, you know, against us. That's all that we need to do to define whether or not we're against it. But in any case, that was definitely true. And if I'm not mistaken, Baby Doc was actually, when he was finally thrown out of power, he ended up living in the United States. Not a big surprise.
No, not a big surprise. I the Duvalier father and son team controlled Haiti from the mid-50s. I think it was 1957 to 1986. And they, during that time, the United States gave them a lot of generous loans for the country. But for instance, Baby Doc apparently managed to divert around 500 million of that in the last few years of his reign to some personal accounts in Switzerland, I believe. But anyway, it didn't seem to matter. The U.S. knew about this It was not. It was not a secret. It was common knowledge that this money was being diverted, as they say. But the United States continued to give the country money, or give the dictators money, and Haiti's debt basically amounted to a new form of slavery. It was during the reign of the Duvaliers that Graham Greene wrote and called Haiti the Nightmare Republic. And even today, Haiti is still a nightmare republic. Something, though, that I only learned by reading Common Dreams this week, a man named Ted Rawl wrote something, an article called Haitian Earthquake, Made in the USA, Why the Blood is on Our Hands. And he asks a question that is very, very important. He and several other people have also written on Common Dreams, but that's the only place I've seen this covered. They ask, why is Haiti so incredibly poor? Why is it so vulnerable, extremely vulnerable and unable to recover? And the story began, as he says, in 1910, when the U.S. State Department, in a consortium with National City Bank of New York, which is now just called Citibank, bought the National Bank of Haiti, which was their only commercial bank, and their national treasury. So, and 5 years later, in order to protect the investment, he called it, Woodrow Wilson ordered U.S. troops to occupy Haiti. So from 1915 to 1934, U.S. Marines were in Haiti occupying it, and it was a very harsh and sometimes brutal military occupation. Haitian patriots were murdered, and but this made sure that 40% of Haiti's gross domestic product was diverted to U.S. bankers, and Haitians were banned from government jobs, anyone who was ambitious managed to be forced into a puppet military, which then basically set the stage for the rest of the U.S.-backed military dictatorships. And the U.S. controlled Haiti's finances until 1947.
I think this is what Smedley Butler, a twice Medal of Honor winner, one of the very few who survived winning the Medal of Honor twice, said that the U.S. Colonial operation was basically a racket, and that that's what he and the others who were occupying the forces and providing the occupying forces in Haiti and practically all of Central America were doing, was just running a racket for the benefit of the corporations and the banks of the United States.
You know, another person who's written about this, it occurs to me, is our own local hero, Stan Goff. And he wrote about the Haitian military, the U.S. military, I believe, in Haiti, didn't he?
Among other places, although I think he was posted more often to Spanish-speaking rather than French-speaking areas. But he was definitely involved in several countries in Central America and the islands. So if you can find anything of his, and he does have a website, which escapes me at the moment, but he has some things to say about Honduras, too. But you should definitely go there to see somebody who has been on Smedley Butler's side of the fence and basically has the same point of view, that it's a racket that we're operating, stealing from anybody who's south of the United States border as much as we can. And that's what it's all about. It's the Monroe Doctrine on steroids.
And the name is Stan Goff, G-O-F-F, and you can Google him and you'll find lots of interesting reading material. Interesting and very knowledgeable, Stan is. Another thing that that I've been seeing on Common Dreams, and if you haven't looked at Common Dreams, do that. It's commondreams.org. And they have some remarkable coverage, and good coverage is also coming from, of course, Democracy Now!, which you'll hear coming up right after this show, and the Real News Network, and you can just Google the Real News, and that's
R-E-A-L, right?
R-E-A-L News. That's a good point, Dick. A year or so ago, actually not quite a year ago, there was an historian I read, and I dug this out, who traveled to Haiti, who really was trying to understand, you know, some of Haiti's history and how it got to be. And she, her name is Alex von Tunzelman, yeah. And she too pointed out, and this was in 2009, yes, in May of 2009, that for two centuries, rich countries and their banks have, quote, menaced almost all of Haiti's wealth out of it. And there are places like Jubilee USA Network, they're calling for a debt forgiveness for the poorest countries. And Haiti is one of those that was driven so far into debt that it has never been able to recover. It has no infrastructure, basically. It 75% of the population lives on $2 a day, and nearly 60% live on less than $1 a day. You can't survive like that. That's, I guess they have nearly 5 million people living on less than $1 million a day. And this is the result of many decades of interference and attempts to control whatever resources and money there was in poorer countries under neoliberal adjustment policies. And it basically robs a government like this of any capacity to deal with tragedy or to improve its infrastructure.
We should point out that the occupation that supposedly ended in 1947 has been taken up again again, an anti-communist, if thinly veiled anti-communist rather than blatant effort, when the Haitians had the effrontery to elect a priest, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who threatened to actually make lives better and try and get the U.S. out. So the U.S. went in after about a year or year and a half, kidnapped him, flew him to, the Central African Republic, and forbade him to return. But eventually he did, and managed to again to win an election and was again overthrown by a coup. And this was under Clinton, and things haven't improved any since then, unfortunately. Apparently, the person who was eventually installed was a relatively good person and was the person who would have come in second, or maybe did come in second, in the second election of Aristide. He hasn't had the support of the people to the extent that Aristide still does.
Yeah. You know, I saw a photo of, I can't remember where it was, but I saw a photo of USAID personnel with dogs, and I don't know whether they are bomb-sniffing, drug-sniffing, or looter-sniffing dogs, but with dogs heading out to Haiti in order to help. And I thought, what an irony, because the USAID was big part of the problem. The USAID, you know, along with a number of industrialists and large landholders, wanted to create what they called at the time agro-processing facilities. And at the same time, they were dumping all this surplus cheap food into Haiti's market, which basically devastated the you know, any agricultural industry there that belonged to the Haitian people. They couldn't sell their own foods because there was so much cheap dumped on the market. Now, this is a common practice in poor countries where the developed countries come in and dump their surplus goods. But the irony is the USAID. And I found myself shuddering when I saw that picture. I thought, they're going in to help? How are they going to help? You know?
Well, if they're corpse-finding dogs or...
yeah, maybe.
Well, so, that's one thing that they've trained dogs to do. Also, they could be survivor-finding dogs because they don't...
Yeah, I hope so, and I hope there really is. There are some 10,000 charitable organizations or relief organizations that have been operating in Haiti for a long time now. And with all of those organizations, it is still so disorganized and that they're unable to actually be very effective. So right now part of the problem is not apparently the number of people wanting to help. It is how that help is gotten to the people. And that is going to be a real big problem because Port-au-Prince is the largest city, the most populated city, and it was heavily populated because as people were driven off their farms because they could no longer make a living, you know, support themselves on farming, and everything was diverted to become sort of an export economy under structural adjustment policies, the Port-au-Prince people were forced to move to the city looking for jobs, but there weren't enough jobs there either, and they were all poverty jobs. Even today, I think Disney pays something like 28 cents an hour to its workers. And Port-au-Prince grew and grew and grew, and because there was no money for adequate building, there were these cinder block and something else called breeze block, which I'm not sure what it is, but buildings that are without the supports, the steel rods, I guess, that help hold the buildings together. So when the earthquake comes along, or it, they just tumble. They just topple down, crushing people.
I think we should take a break now and thank our sponsor, our underwriter, and that would be Internationalist Bookstore on 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, a community resource par excellence. You'll find nothing like it anywhere else in the area. They will have progressive books that you can't find anywhere else, or they can get them for you. And it's also a place where the community meets and greets and discusses the issues like what we're talking about this morning.
Well, we're back and we're discussing Haiti. And before we close today, I want to tell folks just... we want to talk a little bit about things we can do. And again, I have a list of things that was taken from Common Dreams website. And there was a press release issued yesterday from a bunch of human rights groups. Let's see, I'm talking about what we can do. Let's see, these human rights groups were the Center for Constitutional Rights, the CCR, the Center for Human Rights and Global Justice, CHRGJ, the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, Partners in Health, and the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights, and TransAfrica. And they have called for groups to Anyone responding to Haiti's plight needs to take a very long-term view and strive to rebuild a stronger Haiti that includes a government that can ensure basic human rights of all Haitians, and that we need to base any aid in on human rights, respecting human rights, instead of just coming in, dumping aid, or seeing that aid goes to the most well-off, or to a government that doesn't have the capacity to distribute aid as needed. And it may continue the tradition of human rights abuses. We want to make sure that doesn't happen. So the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti has said that the magnitude of the catastrophe, of course, is not necessarily a result, not entirely a result of natural disaster, but rather a history of deliberate impoverishment and disempowerment of the Haitian people through a series of misguided policies. Now, that's the most succinct way I've heard of it being stated. A history of deliberate impoverishment and disempowerment of the Haitian people through a series of misguided policies. And if aid efforts now are without accountability on the part of the donors, and if there is continued what that is called volatility in aid distribution, that will only guarantee greater suffering. Among the things that we can do, another person who was writing on Common Dreams was Carl Linskog. He's a New York-based activist and historian who's working on his doctorate at the City University of New York. And he has written that one of the things that we Americans really need to do is we need to confront our own country's responsibility for the conditions in Haiti. And these conditions, which exacerbated the disaster, the impact of this earthquake, we need to acknowledge America's role in keeping Haiti from achieving meaningful development. And I'm hoping that our government can do that, particularly under, perhaps now, under President Obama. There is some hope because the Department of Homeland Security has said it's going to halt the deportations of Haitians back to the island for the time being. And it is possible, a number of groups are calling for the United States to grant temporary protective status that would allow Haitians in the United States to stay here. It would also be good if they could work so that they can send home, because a big source of income for Haitian families, such as it is people working outside the country and sending money home. And Dick, was there something you wanted to add to that, or could add to my?
Well, one of the things that it's important to keep in mind in terms of this long-term view is the fact that, according to an interview that I saw, I can't remember exactly when, but within the last couple of days, there is only one earthquake engineer in Haiti. And that's obviously not nearly enough when there's an epicenter right near the capital city. So that's one of the sources of the problems, is he clearly said that there is no building code within the country. And so that's one of the things that needs to be done, is to at least on an ad hoc basis install some sort of a building code when it's time to rebuild, so that it's actually done properly.
Yeah. There are a lot of things that could be done to help countries like Haiti respond. Unfortunately, as long as we continue to accept things like the IMF and World Bank's structural adjustment policies, what is really needed is not going to be done. Those policies are destroying infrastructures, not helping them. Ten things the U.S. canon should do for Haiti. Now, this comes again from Common Dreams. It was written by Bill Quigley, who's the legal director at the Center for Constitutional Rights, and he's a law professor at Loyola University in New Orleans. He survived Katrina, and he's been an active human rights advocate in Haiti for years with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. He says that, one, we need to allow all Haitians in the U.S. to work. The number one source of money, here it is again, number one source of money for poor people in Haiti is the money sent from family and workers in the U.S. back home. Haitians continue to help themselves if given a chance, and they'll continue to help help their people in Haiti even when we've moved on to some different issue. Two, we do not allow U.S. military in Haiti to point their guns at Haitians. Hungry Haitians are not the enemy. Decisions have already been made which will militarize humanitarian relief, but do not allow the victims to be cast as criminals. Do not demonize the people who are struggling just to survive. I wrote a letter just last night to the White House asking President Obama to send immediate relief and to not allow the Haitian people to be victimized as looters when they're just trying to survive, that human life should be much more valuable than property under any circumstances. Third step would be to give Haiti grants as help, not loans, grants. Haiti doesn't need any more debt, so we should make sure that the relief that we give really helps Haiti rebuild its public sector so the country can provide its citizens with basic public services, which they have not had. Four, we need to prioritize humanitarian aid to help women, children, and the elderly. They're always the last ones to get help, it seems. And if they are moved, he says, if they are moved to the back of the line, then start at the back of the line. Five, President Obama could enact temporary protected status for Haitians with the stroke of a pen. So he should do it. And that was the other thing I called on him to do, was in my letter last night, was to enact temporary protected status for Haitians. The U.S. has already done it for El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Sudan, and Somalia. So we could do it. And in fact, Professor Quigley says, do it on Monday, Martin Luther King's birthday, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Six, respect human rights from day one. The UN enacted guiding principles for internally displaced people make them required reading for every official and non-governmental person and organization. NGOs like charities and international aid groups are extremely powerful in Haiti. Again, I think I read that there are some 10,000 of them. They must respect the human dignity and the human rights of the Haitian people. Seven, apologize to the Haitian people everywhere for people like Pat Robertson and Rush Limbaugh. Sorry, I nearly laughed on that one. We also need to apologize for people like Sean Hannity and who else? What's the other one? Glenn Beck. Yes. Eight, release all Haitians in U.S. jails who are not accused of any crimes. There are 30,000 people facing deportations. They're not criminals. No one will be deported to Haiti for years to come, should be deported to Haiti for years to come. So release them. And again, you could do this on Monday, as Dr. Quigley points out. Nine, require that all NGOs which raise money in the U.S. be transparent about what they raise, where the money goes, and insist they be legally accountable to the people of Haiti. 10, treat all Haitians as we ourselves would want to be treated. This is basically the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And I think we're about out of time. We're going to have to wrap up. Thank you all. And if you want to have know more about what you could do for Haiti, there are a number of places you could go. You can Google Haiti, for one thing, right now, and there's a lot of websites popping up. But commondreams.org will give you a lot of good information. Go there and stay tuned for Democracy Now! You've been listening to your wake-up call from the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Thanks, and join us again next week.